Welcome back to the MLB.com StatCast podcast. I'm your host, Mike Petriello. Joining me, as he does each week, Matt Myers, MLB.com national editor. Matt, hello.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing great. As I've been saying for a little while, this is a very special show because we've got a guest here we're really excited about. But real quick, before we get to that, it's a special show for another reason, which I just realized this morning. Yesterday was the one-year anniversary of StatCast podcast. We started this thing a year ago.
Wow.
I think that's cool. We've had players, we've had writers, we've had the general manager of the Rockies, and you joined like halfway through, and I think that's helped. So a whole year of the StatCast podcast, that's cool.
And our special anniversary show.
It is a special anniversary show. So we have here in the studio with us someone very excited to have here with us. Tom Tango is here with us. And Tom Tango is going to be joining MLB.com today. It's actually his first day as a senior data architect. I almost got that out. And Tom, we're so happy to have you here.
Thank you, guys. It's really a great day for me. It's one of the things I've been waiting for a long time, and I'm glad it finally worked out.
Now, I'm guessing a lot of the listeners of this podcast heard the name Tom Tango, and they're kind of bouncing up and down. They're like, oh, my God, that's so cool, but I don't think everybody knows. And as I say each week, that's because I know my dad is a regular listener. So just a quick background on Tom here. Tom has been one of the foremost writers, baseball analytical writers, for about 15 years. He's the co-author of the book. He literally wrote the book, Playing the Percentages in Baseball. He's been a consultant for several major league teams, and he's the creator of a lot of stats we use here a lot. FIP, fielding independent pitching, that was Tom. Weighted runs created plus, weighted on base average, leverage index, win expectancy, a whole bunch more. Tom has created all of those, and now he's here to help us work on StatCast and kind of take this data, this enormous amount of data we have, and really understand it better and kind of get to these new stats that we really want to get to. So I think that's really cool, and Tom, welcome. We're really happy to have you. So Tom, when you kind of start digging into the data, I know there's going to be so much to get into. Like, what's the first thing you're really excited to get at?
Well, the thing always starts with, you have to have some sort of question. You're trying to figure out what it is that is going to excite you, interest you. So right now, what I'm looking at is batted ball speed and the vertical launch angle. Because there's so much that goes on in a game that you don't know what it is that's, you know, if it's just luck, if there's a skill there, because all you see is the outcome. You see a hit, you don't know if it was a hard hit ball, if it was a squibbler. So that's what we're trying to figure out. So try to organize the data and just get right into it.
So that'll kind of lead us to expected outcomes, right? We're always trying to get to, you know, it's baseball, right? You could get a ball 110 miles an hour and it's not an out, and it's not a hit sometimes, even though you did your job. And this will kind of help us get a combination of velocity and angle and direction and really go, like, how often was that play supposed to be a hit? And that'll kind of get to, like, luck or skill, right?
Right, exactly. Because when you're watching the game, you know. So, like, you'll watch a game, you'll see a ball getting hit really hard, but it went right to a fielder. And you know, you make a mental note that, okay, that should have been a hit. But a week later, you're not going to remember it. All you're going to see that he got an out. So we're trying to, you know, give a different view to that data so that you'll remember it, that piece of data that was a hard hit ball that ended up with an out. So if you look at some of them, like you'd see guys with like 118 mile an hour exit velocity for an out. So those are almost always home runs or, you know, deep extra base hits. But in these couple of cases, they're outs, which is kind of unfortunate, but it's just like bad luck that would have happened. But, you know, in the future, we know that those guys, if they can hit it that hard, they will end up with success.
What do you think is sort of the next, when you sort of fully get your hands around that data, what is like the next breakthrough? Like, what are you hoping that we can learn? Is it going to be like, is it mostly you think we can do better projections? Do you think we'll be able to do just better post hoc analysis? Like, what's the goal?
No, I think more it's just the understanding of the game itself. I mean, just look at on the fielding side. There's so many different ways you can position the fielders, and it's not just based on who the batter is, but also the score of the game, the inning, the outs, the whole thing. And yet we don't know where all the fielders are positioned. So I would like to know where all the fielders positioned in various game situations, collect that, organize that, and present it in a way so that we can see, you know, in these kinds of situations, this is where you're going to find the fielders. And if there's some teams that don't put their fielders there, that would be interesting too as to why aren't they putting fielders where everyone else are putting them. So I think there's a whole bunch of questions that you could ask, and we just need to organize that data so we can find those answers.
And I think you hit on what everybody from day one wants to know, right? Is how do we improve defensive metrics? Because I think offensive metrics are pretty good. Defensive metrics are always a little questionable. It's like, how much sample size do you need? Does it take 3 years to actually get to an accurate viewpoint? And I think we can hopefully use this data, like you said, the starting points for each, let's say outfielders, because it's not really just about did you catch it, but how much effort did you have to put into catching it? Were you 3 feet away from the ball? Is it more about positioning? Is it more about skill? And, I think that's what everybody really wants from us from day one, right? And that
right.
How would you envision kind of a metric like that working?
Yeah, that's exactly correct, because the guy made an out, but you don't know, was he positioned exactly where he should have been, or he had to run a long way to get that ball? So all we need to do at the very beginning is just establish the starting position of every fielder for every play. And once we know that, we can then figure out what his opportunity space was to make a play. So once we know that, then we could figure out how good is he, and as well, how good is he positioned. So the two combined will give us exactly what we've been after. So it's just a matter of simply, the data is recorded, now we just got to put it together and put it out there.
I have to imagine, on your typical, I'd say, let's talk about outfield defense. Let's say probably 90% of batted balls any outfielder could have caught. Is it 80%? Where's sort of the cutoff, and how do you sort of find that line of where the numbers start to matter, right? Because there's probably 30% of cans of corn in the major leagues I could catch. Maybe 20.
I'd like to see that, but yeah.
No, that's exactly correct, and that's what you would do. You would look for, let's say, the outfielders who make the least amount of plays. And that kind of gives you the minimum point as for the, let's say, the max level of anybody can make that play. And then anything up beyond that, that's where the skill comes in. So, and you're right, there's some gimmies in there. So I don't know if it's like 70% of outs are gimmies and 20% of hits are gimmies. And then everything else is just everything in between where there's skill involved. So, yeah, that's what we're trying to go after. So we have so many batted balls out there. Most of them are noise where skill's not really involved, and now we're going to try to zero in on those that do require skill, and let's figure out which players are making the plays and which are not.
Do you think we could use kind of the new data we have to take existing stats and make like a next version of them? Take, for example, FIP, right? Fielding independent pitching, which for those who don't know, it's an ERA estimator, and it's just about how often does the pitcher get strikeouts and walks and home runs. It tries to take the defense out of it entirely, but it doesn't really account for batted ball quality. And I think we're learning a little bit that the really good pitchers can limit exit velocity and batted ball quality. So do you think, the future is maybe a next version of that incorporates something like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's already coming out by, the public is fantastic with the data. The data is already available in some form, maybe not in the granular form that everyone really wants, but there's enough out there that there's a lot of good public researchers who are doing exactly that. So that's exactly the direction we're going to go in, and we're going to delve into it as much as we can because we have access to all the data that we want.
Now, you've worked for, consulted for a couple teams, the Mariners and the Cubs and the Blue Jays. You're just kind of like being able to peek under the hood inside teams, what sort of, are they using this data to evaluate players, or, how in-depth do these teams get with that kind of stuff?
Yeah, they get pretty in-depth with it. Because anytime you get a new piece of data, you're always trying to figure out, what is this piece of data telling me? And so you never reject data. You always try to figure out what is the data telling you, and you're trying to figure out if there's any kind of bias to the data that it's going to, it might lead you down the wrong path. So let's say as a simple example, if you didn't know anything about Coors, you would think that there was a lot of great hitters with Colorado. But you're aware of what Coors does to hitters, so you have to adjust that data. So the same thing here is that anytime you're given this new piece of data, you have to be a little bit careful that you're not going too far with it. You have to understand its limitations.
Now, one issue we have a lot is trying to identify the data that's meaningful. Take, for example, outfield throwing arms, right? How many times a day does an outfielder just lob a ball back into the infield and he's not really trying and it doesn't matter? But, obviously sometimes he is trying. The way we've tried to get to that is just taking the plays above the 90th percentile. And I know it's not great. We're throwing out a lot of data there, but it's gotten us pretty close. Like, it passes the smell test because you have guys like Puig and Gomez and Aaron Hicks who are atop the list, and that makes a lot of sense. it feels like that's good enough, but maybe we could do better just in terms of like the right mathematical approach, right?
Right. There's a lot of art to it, exactly like you're saying it, because you're watching the game, you already have a feel for what's going on, and you know that if a guy's lobbing it in, it really means nothing in the end. So yes, you're trying to figure out what that point is, and starting with a point of, let's say, only looking at the top 10% of hardest throws for each player, that's a great starting point. And then we just have to figure out, is 10% the best number? And maybe it's 15, maybe it's 7. But we'll get to that point by looking at all the data. And, you know, the data is, you know, it's going to lead you to that answer because it'll speak to you when you see the data.
Yeah, I think you're right. We kind of chose 10 because it's easily understandable from a public point of view. But is it 11.5%? Like, I don't really know the answer to that. And I think you're absolutely right.
And for things like throwing arms and running speed, because there's like not that much of a difference, you know, a guy can throw it 100 times all out, but pretty much he's going to throw it at around the same speed each time, let's say like within a range of 5 miles an hour. So it's not like you, like if someone throws it in your top 10%, he throws it to 90, 93, 92, 91, and then because you drew that arbitrary line of 10%, there's an 84 in there. So you know that 84, you drew the line too low. 84 shouldn't have been part of it. You should just stick with those that were at the top, because a guy who throws all out on 92, if he's then throwing at 84, you know he had to take something off. So we're just trying to be careful that you don't want to, you know, just be blindly follow a rule just because you establish a rule. You still have to let the data speak, and there is some art to all this.
And kind of along those lines, and I'm asking you this because I've seen you actually write about it, is just the idea of average is a little wonky. Like, we use average exit velocity, right? But, you know, if two guys have an average exit velocity of 90 and one of them hits 90 every single time and the other guy is somewhat 60 and somewhat 120, those aren't the same player, because average doesn't really account for the distribution, right? How do you account for that when trying to say, like, who's actually, like, the best at this or that?
Right. So it's very interesting that you bring that up, because last night I decided to just write my first article pre-working here as the first setup, and that's exactly the article I was writing, to try to understand or explain that average is not just any kind of average. You're really focusing on the thing that matters, and that's the highest speed, because that's what really matters. The other stuff, you do like a half swing, you get a pop-up. Those things really don't mean anything because you can like swing and miss, and suddenly there's no exit velocity to report at all. So it actually helps you to swing and miss rather than just hit a pop-up.
So, well, I mean, this is why it's, you know, you look at the leaderboards, it's, you see Pedro Alvarez, you see Mark Trumbo, although he's having a great year, but it's like, it's Chris Carter, it's all the guys who basically swing and miss a lot, because they only, when they make contact, they get a great reading, but they don't make contact a lot.
We've had, Chris Coughlin was on this show saying he'd much rather swing and miss than make poor contact. It's like the live to fight again another day, right? Because that's exactly what you want. You know, I wanted to know, you obviously have, you've worked for teams, but you also, it's been a decade or so since you wrote the book. And I'm assuming that a lot of people who kind of were reading that a decade ago are now working in front offices. And a lot of the ideas you put forward in that are now in the field, right? Like hit your best hitter second, a couple of things. That must be pretty interesting and fulfilling to see these ideas you had 10 years ago now actually impacting the game.
Yeah, the one that actually that I liked the most was the times through the order effect. That one wasn't really discussed much, even when we wrote the book, when we published it. There was some talk prior to the book. There was David Smith of RetroSheet. He was talking about, he wrote an article, you know, in the 90s about a batter's learning in the game. But then after we did the book, we started showing, if you look at it times through the order, you see that the pitcher really gets hit harder and harder each time through the order. And if you talk to players, they know this. So it's not like we had a great revelation that we're showing it. We follow along in terms of, you know, the direction as to how people are thinking. But what we really did was describe the magnitude of it, so that the third time through the order, you don't want an average starting pitcher there. You'd rather have the relief pitcher, because a fresh relief pitcher is better than a tired average starting pitcher. And, you know, and I think the Tampa Rays last year, they were doing a lot of that, where after 18 batters, they would pull their pitcher. So things like little things like that, you know, I find interesting, most people probably like wouldn't even think about it, but those little things I like. There was another one also interesting is last year, Anthony Rizzo bunted twice for a base hit back-to-back in the same game because they were shifting him, so he bunted it in the open spot. And the third time he came up, there was no shift. So it's one of those things where, you know, the player is buying into it and then sees the impact and then, you know, things change. So little things like that is probably the things that I'll remember the most.
So going back to the third time to the order penalty, I've got two questions, follow-up questions on that. One of which is, how much of it do you think is the pitcher getting tired versus players getting familiar with the arm slot, the tempo and the pace? Like, what do you think is the breakdown of that? Second question is, assuming the Rays are sort of the first team to take this to the logical extreme, what would you think, or the quote-unquote logical extreme, what is the logical extreme? If you could start a team in a vacuum and players had no preconceived notions of what a pitching staff should look like, what would pitcher usage look like?
So it would be mostly that the batter is learning from the pitcher rather than the pitcher getting tired. My co-author, he did additional research on that after we published the book. And so he was trying to control for the number of pitches, and the number of pitches really didn't affect much. Really, it was simply the batter was learning rather than the pitcher being tired. In terms of having the ideal staff, you know, unless you have a great pitcher like a Kershaw, where he can go three times through the order, no problem, I would try to focus as much as possible in terms of just limiting those pitchers to those two times through the order, and you get the additional benefit of not letting him hit that extra time at bat. Because so often you'll see a pitcher will stay in the game, let's say in the sixth inning, instead of being pinch hit, he comes up to bat, and then he's pulled the inning right after. So rather than doing that, pinch hit for him, put in the relief pitcher. But, you know, the teams do have legitimate concerns in terms of, you know, wearing out your bullpen. So there is, you know, that aspect that you have to understand that, you know, pitchers are human and they have their own routines. So you have to respect all of that. So you can't just make a big switch. It's got to be like a small shift just to make sure that everyone's on board with it. Because if they're not on board with it, you're not going to succeed.
If a team went stuck strictly to this two times to the order thing, do you think that could be the path back to a four-man rotation?
Potentially, sure. I just don't know that we can get there, and especially if, as long as, you know, like I said, with Kershaw, you can't do that, and now you're going to create like two classes of pitchers so that on the Dodgers, if Kershaw's pitching one way, then you got the rest of the staff pitching another way, it's, you know, it might not work out. So, you know, there is that aspect that you have to consider. So you
the Rays sort of had that with Archer last year, right? A little bit?
Right.
Not on purpose, I don't think. Yeah, I remember writing about it. Yeah, Archer was great, and then everybody else was hurt or injured or couldn't actually get past there even if they wanted to. So it was like, it was a strategy, but it was also just kind of the desperation of the situation that they're in, which I think was rough.
There's also an ego aspect to it as well. So, you know, when we had Ichiro on the Mariners, there was some like talk to try to push him out of the leadoff role and put him, let's say, the number two hitter, which might be more ideal for him as a hitter. But Ichiro in Japan, being leadoff hitter is like this great, great honor. Like being a cleanup hitter here, being a leadoff hitter in Japan is like a great honor. If you were to say to Ichiro, we'll bat you second, you know, that's slighting him, and you may gain a little bit in terms of moving him to the number two spot, but if he doesn't like it, you're going to lose a whole ton against that. So as much as you try to, you know, optimize things, you still have to respect the players have a certain habit, and you got to work with that.
I think that's absolutely true. We've talked a lot this year about outfield positioning, and guys been moving back or forward depending on what the stats say. And some of the outfielders said, you know, I really wanted to do this before, but the pitchers would freak out if I moved back and all the bloops would fall in and they'd kill me. And there's only so much I can do with my teammate freaking out. I have one last question for you, and this is only because I've just lived this very recently. You have been writing about baseball kind of on the side. You've had a real-world job for many, many years. How satisfying was it to go into your boss on the last day at your real-world job and say, I'm going to do baseball full-time?
Well, I didn't actually say the reason I was leaving. I just said that, you know, I'm going somewhere else, and And that's how it ended.
I feel like sooner or later they're going to figure this out and you're going to start getting phone calls.
At some point, but we'll see how long we can last.
Oh, that's upsetting.
I've got one more question, which is, are there any sort of like crazy hypotheses that you've been like dying to test that you're like, okay, now that I have access, like full access to StatCast, I can finally test this hypothesis?
I don't know that I have anything crazy like that. I just know though that when I see the data, some crazy ideas like that may pop up into my head, and then I'll look at it, and it may turn out to be nothing at all, and maybe it'll turn out to be something good. So I'm just excited to try to see what kind of crazy questions we can come up with.
As are we all, I think. I can't wait. Tom, thank you so much for joining us. This has been the StatCast Podcast. I'm Mike Petriello. He's Matt Myers, also joining us, Tom Tango. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week.